Hi there, and welcome to the Greenpeace podcast. This month, with the Copenhagen Climate Change Summit in December rapidly approaching, I met up with the founder of 350.org, Bill McKibben, to talk about the challenges of building a mass movement, the politics of climate change in the States, and how he came to believe that what we need to do is not just slow down the amount of carbon dioxide that we're putting into the atmosphere, but actually reduce the amount that's already up there.
I've been following this a long time, since I wrote the first book about climate change for a general audience 20 years ago this year. And for most of that time, our conception of global warming has been this is a future problem. We've got to go to work on it now, but it's a problem for the future. And we have to start slowing down the amount of carbon we're putting in the atmosphere before too much accumulates. And too much was sort of differently defined. It would be 450 parts per million, or it would be the enough carbon to generate 2 degrees C increase in temperature or whatever, but it was always someplace in the future. That conception really fell apart in the summer of 2007 when the Arctic melted so rapidly and ferociously. By summer's end, there was 25% less ice in the Arctic than there ever been before, certainly in human history and for long before that. There were scientists that I'd been talking to for a quarter century who had always been concerned, and now they were panicked. And that panic was given a numerical form by our world's leading climatologist, Jim Hansen at NASA, who said in a paper that he and his team wrote in January of 2008 that 350 was the bottom line. It was almost as much a kind of psychological insight in a way as a scientific one for finally someone to say what was increasingly obvious, that we're past the point where we can be. It's not something that we have to worry about passing in the future.
So we're up in the 380s, 390s. Yeah, yes. What do we physically have to do to lower atmospheric concentrations to that level?
The Earth scrubs carbon, yes. Forests and oceans take some out every year. They take it out a little less effectively all the time as we warm them up, okay? Dead forests aren't much good at sequestering carbon, you know? But they still do take out a lot, and if we stop pouring more in, then eventually they'll get ahead of the curve. But we need to stop pouring more in now, or else that curve and the feedback loops will get too great. The essential bottom line from 350, if you look at the data, is we've got to be out of the business of burning coal as a planet by 2030, and in the West before that. If we don't, we'll just put too much carbon in the atmosphere to ever get back to that place where we need to be.
And as you've mentioned, the science is in some respects moving very rapidly, although it's moving towards greater and greater certainty that the time to act is now or has passed. What's your sense of the direction that the politics of climate change are moving in?
They're not moving much at all at the moment, is my sense. You know, our sort of current negotiating tracks and things were set years ago, and we're having trouble even getting close to those. And the reason is that there's not enough of a movement to shake things up. We have to reboot this conversation fundamentally. And the only way we can do that is by building a movement that'll make that happen. And that's why we've got this 350.org campaign. We're not an organization. We're just a campaign. We need everybody to play.
Why do you think these successes at creating mass grassroots movements have been more of a thing that we've seen in the States, perhaps, than in other countries? I mean, I'm thinking of things like Al Gore's We campaign, or yourselves, you know, 350.org, or the kind of PowerShift youth movement in the States as well. We haven't really seen the same kind of things in the UK.
But the States had a different political climate in that we were getting absolutely nowhere. Our government was producing nothing. George Bush wasn't doing, so we needed to amp up, maybe it was more obvious that we needed to amp up the pressure some more, okay? That was part of it. But even in the U.S., I mean, it was only when we did Step It Up 2 years ago that we really had a big mass movement about climate for the first time. I mean, you know, in 2006, I organized a march across Vermont, my home state, with 1,000 people, 5-day march, that newspaper accounts said may have been the largest demonstration that had yet taken place in the U.S. Nobody has been doing this work on the scale that it needs to be done. You know? I mean, around the world, Greenpeace has done fantastic work in helping to mobilize stuff, and other people too, but there hasn't been a mass mobilization of the kind that we need around a common platform, a common idea.
This December, we have the Copenhagen Climate Change Summit for the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which I think in a way is kind of dividing the environmental community somewhat, because I think some people are seeing it as the line in the sand, the final chance to get something really good which is going to fix the problem, and others are seeing it as something which is going to be inherently disappointing and won't deliver what we actually need. I mean, do either of those ways of looking at it make sense to
probably
you?
Both of them make sense. It's probably sort of true. I mean, in a certain sense, we really are getting down to the wire, and we've got very few bites at the apple left, you know. Copenhagen needs to count. The idea that it's going to produce an agreement equal to the task at hand is, akin to believing in unicorns. I mean, it's not going to happen, but we can make it much better than it would otherwise be, and we can set the ground for a continuous push and improvement. We can't walk away from Copenhagen saying this is the end of the process. It's over. We're going to go away for 10 years like we did after Kyoto. That's the one outcome that can't happen. The most important thing, I think, is less the specific details of the treaty than what the conversation is about. If we can move the conversation toward we have to take radical action now to save civilizations, then we'll be getting someplace. If the basic tenor of Copenhagen is this is a technical problem that we can handle with some tweaking here and there and some adjustments down the road, then we're screwed.
Is there a really clear line towards how to change things?
Yes, to some degree. I mean, change always happens somewhat unpredictably. But we know certain fundamental things that need to happen. One, you need an agreement on where you're going. If you stop people in the street and you ask them, should we do something about climate? You know, should we make some internet? It must be, yes, we should. If you ask them, what? No one has any idea. Which means that we're in the situation where our political leaders can go away to Copenhagen and sign a perfectly mediocre agreement and come back and say that they've done what needs doing. And no one will be able to really mount much of an objection. If we get up and say, no, no, we needed 25% reductions by 2020 and you gave us 20% by 2030, that's not going to work. So the first part of the conversation, the first part of the strategy requires having a real target that we can hold people to. And the second part requires building the movement of a size and scale enough to sort of hold them to it. That means, among other things, a movement that's more beautiful than in the past, more creative, more musical, more dramatic, more artistic, and also much more diverse. One that exists north and south, rich and poor countries. The organizing that I'm proudest of is the stuff that we're doing in Latin America, in India, in China, in Africa, in Eastern Europe, in places that have done little to contribute to this problem and are suffering much from it, and where people have never felt like they had a voice before, and now they're beginning to feel like they do. And on October 24th, those voices we merged with voices from the developed world, and that'll be very beautiful to watch.